Download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good evening. I am Caroline Oh, and with me tonight is a man who has dedicated his life to finding the ultimate truth. His journey first led him along the scientific path as a professor of physics. From there, it took a spiritual turn, and in 1987, he dedicated his life to the service of Puja Swami Bhumananda Tirtha. With me is Swami Nirvaseshananda Tirtha. Welcome to the show. Very nice to have you here with us, Swamiji.
Thank you.
Thank you for coming in. Now, actually, I'd like to start with a look back before 1987, before the renunciation. You had a successful career as a scientist and a professor at the Indian Institute of Technology. So to begin with, tell me, why did you decide to pursue a career in science?
Right from the beginning, I was a seeker of the ultimate truth. So naturally, that led me to inquire through the logic of physics, particularly physics of science. Mm-hmm. And also the same thing was responsible for the spiritual inquiry, because both are inquiring after the ultimate truth,
right,
the reality.
Okay, so at that point, what ultimate truth were you seeking exactly?
At that time, whatever we knew, I knew. I did not have a very clear picture of what I am going to know. But certainly we have a faith, we had a faith that the ultimate truth is only one. And by knowing that all our inquiries will be fulfilled, I mean all our inquiries will be solved through that process. So through when I had studied physics, I was looking for whether all the phenomena can be explained from where, suppose to tell you in short, it is the what is the source of the universe, or what is the source of the world, or who am I? These are the who am I. When I ask, it becomes a spiritual inquiry.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the source of the universe? It becomes a scientific inquiry.
Right.
So both were the points of inquiry which I started with. So one led me through physics, the other through spirituality.
Okay. So your path through physics at the time, was it, was it not everything that you had hoped it would be? Did it not satisfy you in terms of the answers that you were looking for?
Certainly not. Because physics has not come out with the ultimate answer. But certainly it gave me the joy of and then gradually evolving knowledge, that more and more I came to know of the depth of physics. It was an unification, more and more unification, many things which we think in terms of plurality, so many things happening, they are explained by a single law. So that joy of unity and diversity I was getting in physics, and which is the joy of unity and diversity is the spiritual joy also we get finally.
Okay, so how long were you doing that for? How long did you have a career in physics for specifically?
Up to 1987, mm-hmm. From say the right from the beginning, say before 60s, and end of 50s.
And at that point, what type of projects were you working on?
Actually, my PhD was on electromagnetic scattering. It is on electromagnetics. So I studied in pure physics. I studied pure physics, particularly in the field of quantum mechanics.
Mm-hmm.
And then I did my PhD in electromagnetics.
Okay. So then when your journey took a spiritual turn, I mean, how do you reconcile both the different things that you're doing? Because what you're doing now is very different. But are there any similarities between the two?
Yes, yes. Both were absolutely complementary. I never had any contradiction at all.
Mm-hmm.
And even the disciplines we have to undergo, they were also more or less the same, because what we have to get rid of is our preconceived ideas and constructed ideas about truth. So physics also, as I went deeper and deeper into it, it is how to become very impersonal about your view. We have a natural tendency of clinging to what I think to be the true.
Mm-hmm.
But to get at the truth, you have to become very impersonal, impartial, and even you have to be very impersonal about your own discoveries.
Hmm.
Because your discovery sometimes may go wrong if you're too much clinging to that.
Okay. Was it easy for you to let go of that sort of impartiality?
Let go means?
Let go of the person that you were.
No, I don't get your point, please.
For example, because after the spiritual turn, you said what you need to do is develop an impartiality, because with your preconceived ideas, I suppose you're used to thinking about things the same way. You're used to having certain perceptions about things.
Can I give you an example?
Yes.
Suppose in spirituality, we start with a very naive concept of God, which goes on changing. So unless we are ready to let go our previous concept, we will not get at the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, in physics, suppose in, so to say, in the external science,
right,
we consider initially that the mechanics and the thermodynamics or the heat, they are absolutely different, because heat is what we feel as a touch, sensation of touch.
Right.
Whereas mechanics, we deal with the various motions of things and all that. The two subjects are entirely different, and in our schools we are taught also in that manner. We never knew that the two are absolutely linked. But when we come to the kinetic theory of heat, we find that there is nothing like heat except a motion of the molecules there. Suppose you are finding something to be hot, you are touching a vessel which is on the oven, you find it hot. What is taking place is the oven, the molecules are oscillating at a higher, with a higher energy,
right,
the violent oscillation. Your hand molecules are not oscillating at that energy. When you come in touch with the vessel, those molecules are hitting against your hand, your finger molecules.
Mm-hmm.
And the finger molecules are gaining a little more of energy from the vessel molecules.
Right.
That more energy through the nerves, it is passed through our brain as a sensation of higher temperature or heat. I feel the heat.
Yeah.
So truly speaking, this heat, when you understand it in depth, it is nothing but the mechanical motion of the molecules.
Okay.
What we feel as temperature, it is actually the mechanical motion of the molecules. So these used to give me a lot of unification joy. I mean, joy of knowing the truth in the same manner. I mean, in as one.
Okay. So with this greater understanding of perhaps how things work and even how your body works, for example, what's the most important takeaway point from that for you?
The most important lesson is that we look at the world always in a fragmented manner, thinking everything is different, this way, that way, everything is different. Suppose the colors, we are using so many colors, and we are fond of one color, we are hating another color, so many things are there. But when you know the truth, what is the color? The electromagnetic wave is a very wide spectrum of which very little you are seeing. And that too, because of our three rods and cones in our eyes, we are associating color with that. So when you know the truth that these diversities, they don't have much meaning except your fondness for something, your dislike for something. So that comes very close to spirituality. Spirituality also, we do the same thing.
Okay.
It is knowing the one which has become many.
Now tell me, what went into that decision for you to take the spiritual path? Was there something that happened, a particular event?
It was a natural growth and evolution. I did not have to decide anything, because both I was pursuing parallelly. Even when I was doing the research, it's not that I was not a spiritual pursuer or spiritual seeker.
Mm-hmm.
Right from school days, I have been pursuing spirituality as well as my science. And it so happened that spiritual pursuit, it engrosses you so much. It needs a certain wholesomeness. If you give me a time, I can give a little more explanation about it. Because in science, we are knowing about the object. Suppose we know about this this headphone. Now, but knowing that I am not changing, it has nothing to do with me.
Mm.
It is with an object. Even if I know the table, if I know the everything in this world, that is not going to change me as such by knowing the object. But in spirituality, the whole inquiry and experiment is with the subject, who am I? So every bit of the knowledge is going to change me. So as we approach truth, it becomes very wholesome occupation for us. So at one time we will feel like not doing any other thing than to devote the whole life and time in that.
Okay.
Well, first in gaining the knowledge and then in disseminating the knowledge.
Okay. Now we'll go into a greater depth in just a little bit. In the meantime, I'm going to play your first song. Now we chose this one from 1973, the year of your spiritual initiation from your guru. This song was actually one of the 30 most popular songs at the time. It's from Steeler's Wheel. It's called Stuck in the Middle with You. Keep it here in conversation. BFM 89.9. Welcome back to In Conversation. I'm Caroline Oh, and with me is Swami Nirvaseshananda Tirtha on In Conversation. So, Swami, we were talking about your renunciation a little earlier and, you know, what you had to go through. So how different was your life after you decided to change paths?
Again, I would like to say it was not really changing the path. Mm. I was slowly growing naturally into it. It was not a decision that I cut this path and go over to that. But as far as the external life is concerned, this is that I'm talking about my seeking mind. But as far as the external life is concerned, there was great change. Because when we take to spiritual life wholesomely, it means we leave our profession. We don't stay with our family people. We leave all the properties and wealth, whatever we have. It's a complete renunciation. You have to be on the street. In my case, of course, I did not have to be on the street because I joined my Gurudev in an ashram in Kerala. But that means a complete change of the external, the work I have been doing before and what the work I did after joining the ashram.
Okay, so that was your external life. And what exactly did you give up? Was it hard to give up? I mean, I would imagine the family, your biological family that you were born
with. It was not at all difficult for me, but for other people it might be. Suppose my mother, she was not really, although they are also spiritual, and in our country it is a part of the culture that a person given to seeking the truth may leave the home anytime that is there, and people finally do like it also. They are proud of it also, but at that time they naturally will find very difficult because they were quite old, and they will find that I will not be able to see or have the support of the son as we were having. Father did not have any difficulty, but mother said that, well, why don't you go after my body falls? So naturally it's a quite difficult situation. Yeah. But I told her that, why are you saying like that? Suppose you say that, why don't you go after the body falls? Do you mean to say that as long as I am not renouncing, I will be thinking in my mind that, when my mother's body will fall, when she will pass away, when she will pass away, and then I will leave. It's not a very favorable condition. I am leaving, and it is for a good cause. And by that, everywhere there will be welfare. You will also have welfare by that. You will like it after some time. Then she immediately said that, well, I agree to that. You do it.
Okay.
So this kind of difficulty always will be there. Family people, other relatives, the friends, they will not have a full idea of what is this renunciation, what this renunciation is. So there will be difficulties, but if we are not very, very, sticking to
strong will,
strong about your opinions and all, and you love everybody, then with the love, everything can be sorted out. Mm. So with the friends and with my relatives, that love played a great role, which they all finally supported, and they were happy about it also.
Do you think it would have been possible to achieve the same results without the renunciation? Perhaps at a later date, perhaps slower?
No, I don't think it would have been. Same result means I might have discovered the truth otherwise also, but it is not the same way. Suppose you are a police person. If you go without the police uniform, will you be able to fulfill your purpose? People will not know that you are a policeman. They will not come to you for protection. They will talk to you as you are anybody else on the street. So, as a doctor, unless the doctor is having his tethos and his dress and all, we will not know unless we go to the hospital. So, it is like that when we take to this spiritual path wholesomely, the change in our dress, the change in our lifestyle, they are part of the wholesomeness in the process, which gives you a fullness to that life, particular life.
Okay. So help me to understand this a little bit better. As a spiritual leader, are there different levels, and what level are you at?
Different level means you are talking about me in different periods of time?
Oh, no. Different levels of spirituality, are there?
It is there, but it's very difficult to judge from outside. Each person is different. And his ways, his understanding also will be, although the final experience of the truth is same for all. I will give an example. If you have heard of Ramakrishna and Vivekananda, Ramakrishna was the teacher and Vivekananda was the disciple. But if you look into their activities, and whatever they did, even their speeches and all, whatever they spoke, it's poles apart. But he was the fondest disciple of Ramakrishna. And in their experience, they experience the same truth. But whatever expression comes out of the knower, it depends on his past, his body, his mind, his upbringing, his learning. Mm-hmm. Everything will be different. So each spiritual leader will be different. About level, when you ask, it is very difficult to identify the level. Even if you know, we will not generally speak about it. Mm-hmm. Because how can you judge others? That benefit of doubt will always be there. We will keep quiet. We will only know, we would like to know what, where, which stage we are. And if there is improvement necessary, we will improve. If there is further evolution necessary, we will try to evolve further. But right. About others, it is, we don't say anything.
Okay. So having taken this path, do you feel that you've managed to attain what it is you were looking for?
I don't have any more seeking now.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay, we are going to play our second song for you. It's from 1976. Now, this was the year you had your first job as a lecturer of physics in Calcutta. This song was the most popular of all during that time. The Eagles Hotel, California. BFM 89.9. Good evening, I'm Caroline Oh. We are smack in the middle of In Conversation. Our guest this evening is Swami Nirvaseshananda Tirtha. Now, Swamiji, we were talking about your life path a little earlier. You started off as a professor, a scientist, and then you took the spiritual path, and that was what we were on. Now, spirituality is something that's really hard to describe, but it has been said that it takes us from selfishness to selfness, from the constricted individual identity, that's what you said a little earlier, to the comprehensive universal identity. Now tell us, what exactly does that mean to you?
See, we have a lot of misconceptions about spirituality. The first thing is that it's not same as religion. Religion depends on a certain faith, on a concept of God. But when we start questioning that concept, and does God exist? If at all he exists, what kind of God he is, all those things we start asking. And finally the question comes, who am I, who is looking at the world and inferring about God or the world, all those things. So the spirituality starts from that enquiry, that is, we start looking within, that who is the seer in us, who is looking at the world. From that it starts. So it is absolutely based on the personality. It is not based on any God existing anywhere in the sky or outside. It is based on our own personality. And the final discovery is also that I am the universal consciousness, and that is same as God. Whatever we call as God, whatever we call as reality, the philosophers call reality, the religionists will call God, and whatever the spiritualist will call I, or Brahman, they are all the same. That is the ultimate discovery. So that takes place, that I, which we generally consider as limited by my body-mind personality and that consciousness inside this body-mind personality. By that I am fragmented from the whole world, I am separate from the whole world. From there we go to a point where this I becomes the universal I, that there is only one consciousness existing everywhere. And on that consciousness, the whole universe is appearing to be. So the whole concept changes there. So it is not at all, wherever there is a selfishness, the selfishness is based on the separate identity of myself. That I am segregated from the whole world, and I want to have this, I want to have that. This is causing the selfishness. When this fragmentation is not there, and I become everywhere, I become the universal, then there cannot be any question of any selfishness at all. That self, that universal identity is called the self. I have written with the capital S there. That is the self. So all selfishness is depending on a very constricted idea about this I, which we are always using. And the final reality of the I is it is universal. So the path is from constriction to expansion. if that is clear to you, the path is from that constricted sense of I to the universal I. So whatever takes us from a small I to a larger I means it is an path of expansion. So selfishness is just the opposite of that. It is a path of contraction or constriction.
Right.
So spirituality means expansion.
In this day and age, do you find it hard to achieve that kind of expansion? It feels as though we're becoming more fragmented.
Pardon?
Do you find it hard to achieve that in this day and age?
In
this time.
I don't think it has got anything with the time.
Mm.
Because it is an experiment with our own personality. We discovered that the selfish people were there in ancient time also.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it depends on the modern time. People are more selfish. Well, with all the modern paraphernalia, so many things hitting your mind from all those sides, there might be a difficulty. But anybody attempting to know this, I don't think it is more difficult now than it was earlier. Because the constrictions are same in the mind.
In your mission to help spiritual seekers, what are some of the more challenging issues that you've helped people to deal with?
Challenging issues of people?
Yes. In achieving...
This is the most challenging issue, because what happens is that those who take to spirituality, often they are selfish people, because they leave everything. Leaving everything, they come to spirituality. So, by nature, they are not concerned about the people around. So, they are generally selfish. Whereas this pursuit is such that it is to get away from the selfishness.
Hmm.
So, we often say that we are called sannyasins, the renunciates. We often say that we think that the sannyasins are given to detachment. Means, they have no relationship with the world at all.
Hmm.
That is, it is a constricted isolation from the world.
Hmm.
But in truth, it is just the opposite. It is not isolation. It is your circle increases. You embrace the whole world. Initially, you are embracing only yourself and your own family, maybe your husband and wife and your children.
Hmm.
That goes on expanding. And finally, you embrace the whole world as your own. So it is just the opposite of selfishness. But people, by and large, they are selfish. So the challenging task of imbuing this spirituality in others is to get rid of their selfish motives. That has been the real challenge with the devotees and disciples we face.
Would you say that we are our own worst enemies then?
Yes.
Very much so. Okay. What do you think is the most important thing you can teach to spiritual seekers or just people in general?
Most important thing is that impersonality, impartiality and expansion.
Why don't you elaborate on that a little bit?
As I just now said, impersonality means normally we are applying always a color to the world. Actually, in our Sanskrit, there is a very good term. It's called vairagya. We translate it as dispassion, which is not a proper translation. Vairagya means lack of color. That means seeing the world as it is, seeing yourself as you are and seeing the world as the world is. Normally, we are always applying a partial color on the world, that this is my and this is others. Mm. If it is my child, there is a special color applied to that. I will defend his defects also. I will try to blame others for my son's defects. That partial color of me and mine, if that is removed, then our vision becomes impersonal and impartial. And expansion, as I have already explained, that it is embracing more and more everybody, bringing to your own circle.
Mm-hmm.
In Sanskrit, there is a shloka which ends with, for such a person, vasudhaiva kutumbakam. That means for him, the whole world is his own family.
Okay. Now, as a spiritual leader, tell me, what is your diagnosis of today's society, considering you're trying to look at it without color, as impartial as possible?
I can tell you something. People can think about it. It is extremely important for all of us to think about it. If you look into the history of human civilization, you will find that till the Industrial Revolution, the kind of degeneration, corruption or distraction which were there, or the destructive forces, degenerative forces which were there, it is much more than what it was. That is, after Industrial Revolution, we have been very much benefited. Our life has changed. The technology, science, industry, everything has come after that. And that has changed our life. But with that, a great change has come in the destructive forces have become tremendously powerful, which takes us away from our auspicious path. So, unless we also enhance the centripetal force means which brings us back to our inmost self or to our real auspicious path, to counter the centrifugal force which is taking us away from the auspicious path. Now, with the modern amenities, that destructive path is very strong. Unless we reinforce our values, our spiritual values, which will take us back to our inmost self, the whole civilization is going to degenerate. To save the civilization, we have to be very conscious of this value system, and which is all taking us back to the fulcrum of our life, the center of our life. Does it mean, or I have to explain more?
That's fine. Tell me, what is your main purpose or objective at this point?
I have no purpose or objective. Whatever I am, I freely interact with the world. If people need my presence, I come there as Malaysian people, or some people are there who have invited me. I have come. Mm-hmm. Whatever they ask, I reply. Mm-hmm. So it's just like a natural life I lead. So if you ask purpose, I have no purpose at all.
What about if you could choose somewhere to give, I suppose, a spiritual boost? Is there somewhere that you would like to work in?
Spiritual?
Boost.
To?
A lift. Perhaps a place that requires a spiritual lift. Is there anywhere that you would like to work?
That is what we are doing.
Yes.
What else we do? We are doing only that.
But is there a specific country that you would like to work in? A specific location that you feel...
I have not thought about it. I went to Indonesia last year. I liked the country very much. But I went only once. There were people calling me. So, but I liked the country very much. Malaysia, I've been coming for quite a few years now. It all depends on who are the people, whether they're calling or not. Because we speak to only very few people. Around us, maybe about 100 people we speak to. And sometimes in some program, there will be 400, 500 people. Mm-hmm. Very few. So... we don't go anywhere uninvited or uncalled for. So when they ask, we say whatever we know.
Okay.
It goes on naturally like that.
Indeed. Okay. I'm going to end with one final question. Actually, I'd like you to finish this sentence. The world would be a happier place if...
if they remembered their core identity and the core value system. Nobody can say that there is no inner voice in me. There is an inmost self in us which from where we are always, it is saying what is long-term, auspicious for us. We are not listening to it. We are not heeding that call because of our all attractions for various material things and all. We can have all the material prosperity, but if it is disbalanced fondness, then it is going to crash. We have to give much more importance to our fundamental identity, which will balance that is the spiritual progress, you can say. If the spiritual development is equally done, equally taken care of along with the material development, then great will be the civilization. But if it is a disbalanced development, then the whole civilization will crash under its own weight.
Okay. Well, looking forward, let's just hope for a happy conclusion. I'm going to end with the final song that we've put forward for you. This is from 1987. This is the year you took up the life of Renan Syed. This song was one of the top 10 most popular at the time. It's actually one from Bon Jovi. It's Living on a Prayer. On that note, Swami Nirvaseshananda Tirtha, thank you very much for joining
us.
Thank you.
Nice.
Thank you. BFM 89.9. We'll be right back.